Ladies, let's talk about menopause. Guys, listen up too, because your lives are also affected by it. And one of the more difficult things is that every woman experiences it differently. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're talking today about the three stages of menopause, the symptoms and the treatments. Our guest is Dr. Tess Jordans. She is a board-certified physician who recently launched the telemedicine practice 1988 Wellness, and it focuses on menopause and weight loss care for women ages 35 to 65 throughout Wisconsin. What questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dr. Jordans, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. What an interesting idea, your business. Tell us a little bit about what you do and where the idea came from.
Sure. So I basically, like you said, I see women, and the reason why that age group is quite large is because some women can be much younger. I'd say the typical ages are somewhere mid-40s to about 60, where mm-hmm. women are most symptomatic. But
sure.
I see women to basically help them through this chapter, really make them feel like they can thrive. It's not about, you know, just symptoms, but of course we are trying to help with those as well. But it's educating women about how certain lifestyle choices or medications or both can really increase their health span, avoid chronic diseases further down the road, really, you know, get them being the healthiest versions of themselves.
And the name?
Yeah. So 1988 was the year a bill passed called H.R. 5050. And this was the first time that women in the United States could get a small business loan without a male co-signer. I know.
Which, considering they just were able to get a checkbook a few years earlier than that, it's kind of scary. But okay, excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that name.
Thank
you. It's wonderful. And telehealth. Do you feel, obviously you do feel, that women can get the same care as them going in to see someone? Why do you feel that they can do that?
So primarily one of the things that I'm doing for women is I'm listening, right? So I'd say besides the education piece of it, the listening part of it is what's happening the most. And that can happen in any way. So part of that is, frankly, what I'm doing, right? It's a lot about listening to them and hearing mm-hmm. what their goals are and what they've experienced other places. But the other half is I'm not taking over as somebody's primary. I'm there as a specialist. Mm-hmm. And so they will still be encouraged to go for their, you know, routine visits, their physical exams, all of that. And if something comes up in conversation and they don't have a primary, then I have enough connections from working in healthcare that
sure.
we can certainly take care of that as
yeah.
well.
Now, are you able to take insurance for coverage?
So I don't take insurance.
Okay.
I am a one-woman show, and that certainly does complicate things.
Mm-hmm.
But patients can submit to their insurance with, you know, the bill at the end that has all the codes and everything, like
okay.
an out-of-network provider.
Okay.
And then lots of people use their HSA account and things like that.
I was just going to say that was
yeah.
a perfect way to use your HSA. So let's get to menopause, okay? When is it officially started?
So officially, age 45, well, or let me tell you, the average age for menopause is early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Menopause actually is the day after you've had 12 months of no periods. It's semantics, right?
Sure.
So
mm-hmm.
menopause is everything after that. Before that, and including that year of your final periods, is considered perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
And women can be in perimenopause for 10 years, you know, before anything actually ever ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And is there a post-menopause, or is it just...
So, yes, technically speaking, post-menopause then is that, you know, day after, right? Everything from then on, you know, you could, so you're technically still in postmenopause at 75.
Okay. Right? So menopause is basically one day.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, right. That is good to know. But all you people out there, that does not mean it only lasts for one day, because it does not. So what are some of the things that can happen? Let's start with the beginning. Perimenopause. What are some of the symptoms that a woman is actually in perimenopause?
So common things that get talked about a lot. Of course, irregularity to your menstrual cycle, but you don't have, that's not a requirement. Mm-hmm. Some women will still pretty much cycle regularly, but continue to have other symptoms. Of course, we've all heard about hot flashes and night sweats. That's what most people think about, but there's so much more. There can be joint pain, fatigue, brain fog, new onset anxiety or worsening anxiety and depression, concentration difficulties. Honestly, I think the list is growing. I don't know where it's left off. It depends where you look. 50, 60, 70 different symptoms that a woman can be experiencing.
And from what I've heard from many women is that a lot of those, because they are vague and not necessarily the ones that people think about, they are not addressed by their regular physician. They're kind of dismissed. Is that what you've heard too?
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing, because I've been on both sides. I've been that provider, and now I'm advocating for those women. So the problem is not necessarily, it's the system problem that because of what happened a couple decades ago, and I'm sure at some point we'll probably get into that, but medical students, residents were not taught about menopause. I can't even remember my lecture, but I'm sure I had a short, brief lecture. So it's not on your radar. When these women are coming in for these symptoms, like you said, sometimes it can be very vague. Mm-hmm. They're getting test after test after test after test because they seem, quote unquote, normal on paper, but they don't feel normal. And again, you're not trained to look for it. So It doesn't even come up in your differential.
Right, right. It's always, what was the last day of your first period? Or their last day, first day of your last period. It's like, okay, that was, 15 years ago. Thank you very much. But they don't ask about that. They really don't. So that's interesting. Now, so when you get someone who comes to you and say, hey, this is going on, I think this is what it is, do you then interact with their physician, or do you just give them the knowledge to go forward with it?
I can do both. Whatever the patient is most comfortable with, I would say. So I'd say a lot of the women that I see already have an inkling, or they're coming in really to confirm what's going on. When they're seeing me, again, because I'm not like a traditional provider, I'm just not getting someone who's walking up the street and saying, like, I have this and this. But they might say that, but they're like, and I'm pretty sure it's this, or I think it could be perimenopause. And so then I will, say, I can communicate with your provider, or, we can do this. Because I do see a lot of women in my own community or thereabouts, some of these providers are the ones that are referring to me. So we've kind of already had this conversation of, oh, I have a great patient for you to see.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. Well, that's lovely that they're doing it that way, too.
Yes.
And as far as treatment goes, there can't be an overall thing that you can do because there's so many different symptoms, right?
Absolutely.
So how do you address that?
So again, it all goes back to listening. Mm-hmm. It all goes back to taking the time to individualize that treatment. And it depends on each individual woman's goals, their health risks, what medications they're currently taking, what treatments they might be, undergoing. And then their personal preference. So even though someone may come to see me, it doesn't necessarily mean that they want medications. They just may want, how can I mitigate some risks? How can I make some good lifestyle choices? Even if you do choose medication, and in this case, it is, when I say medication, I'm usually referring to menopausal hormone therapy. Mm-hmm. But even if you choose that, there still isn't a magic pill, right? Or a magic patch or whatever. It still goes along with lifestyle changes. And nobody's mm-hmm. going to be perfect, but there are certainly things that women can do to both decrease risk and help themselves feel better.
Now, today, of course, we heard in the news that there's been a change with the medication labeling. The warnings are now going to go away. It's kind of like it swings back every decade or so. It was like, this is great. No, this is bad. This is great. No, this is. So what's happening and how do you feel about these medications?
Okay. So, yes, yesterday was the day that the FDA had their press conference, and it was a monumental day, honestly, for women and for women's health. Just to back up briefly, 2 decades ago, there was a major study, the WHI, or the Women's Health Initiative. And that was a double-blind and randomized control study, the only one of its kind like that, that was ended early because there was a certain group of women on a certain type of hormone in a certain route, all very important, that could have shown a signal for increased breast cancer. So they ended the study early, but the results of that got in the wrong hands, ended up in mass media, splashed on the headlines, basically saying all menopausal hormone therapy is bad for all women, period. So women got rid of their medications, providers stopped prescribing, and then like myself, then coming into school after that, you weren't taught about it. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to yesterday, what happened was the FDA decided to take off this black box warning that is on all forms of menopausal hormone therapy, including local topical estrogens, which means it doesn't have any systemic effects. It has never been shown to have any of these risks. So they announced yesterday that they're going to not only be removing that from the local topical versions, the non-systemic versions, but from all menopausal hormone therapies, basically saying that, you know, it shouldn't just be this blanket of it's going to give you cancer, heart disease, stroke, and dementia. I think that's what the black box had said, basically, on all these products, because that's just, frankly, not true. It's very nuanced. It depends on the individual, just like anything else we take.
Sure. And doesn't it, are we giving it back into the hands of the physicians who are trained to give out these medications for this individual? Whereas before we're kind of like, okay, this is government agency and you have to follow this. I mean, how do you feel about this change?
So I'm hopeful mm-hmm. that this change, it's going to be slow because medicine does work like the government. It works pretty slow. But that physicians and other providers will see this and feel better about prescribing or even learning about what their resources are, about not turning away that woman who is asking for that help, even if they themselves aren't the expert or, you know, gosh, primary care providers are overwhelmed as it is. I get it.
Sure.
But listening, validating, and then saying like, hey, I have a great resource for you. You know, I don't know enough about it, but I'm going to send you to someone who does.
Okay. Well, we're talking about menopause with Dr. Tess Jordan. She's a board-certified physician who recently launched the telemedicine practice 1988 Wellness, focusing on menopause and weight loss care for women ages 35 to 65 throughout Wisconsin. If you have a question for her, our number is 800-642-1234. And, of course, you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. And we do have a caller, James in central Wisconsin. Go ahead, James.
Hi. I'm calling, I guess, in place of my girlfriend. She's going through menopause during this time, and she gets the hots and the colds, mm-hmm. you know, during night and during sleep. And sometimes she wakes up and she feels very, 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 how do you say it? Not on, public radio, but
Frisky?
Yeah,
okay.
Frisky.
Yeah.
Frisky would be a good thing.
Okay.
And sometimes she just wants to do it herself.
Okay. So what do you tell someone like James to help him understand what's going on, and how can he help his girlfriend?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as you had mentioned before, even men, this is an important conversation for them, mm-hmm. because they likely will have, even if they don't yet, they likely will have someone in their life, you know, be it a sister, mother, coworker, what have you, who's going to experience this if they're blessed to live long enough. So a couple of things that would be great. Hearing them saying, you know, I hear you. I'm not here to fix your symptoms, right? But I hear you. There are places where you can go for resources, or encouraging them to take that time for themselves, to not take no for an answer, because unfortunately that does happen to women often, right? They go see somebody who they think is going to be able to help, mm-hmm. and they're told that they're normal or nothing's going on, or that they're just aging.
Yes.
But, you know, kind of being that support and that a little bit of a push sometimes, saying there is help out there, or listening to things like this where, you know, you may learn a thing about lifestyle changes that may help someone feel more comfortable during this time period.
And then the woman herself a lot of times doesn't understand what's going on.
No.
Either. So you're kind of both figuring it out together is always a good way to do things. When you have appointments, is the person's partner sometimes part of that?
I haven't experienced that yet, okay. But I certainly wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, turn that away. But no, that hasn't come up yet.
Okay. Let's go to Elizabeth in Ellison Bay. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. First of all, I'm thrilled that this is happening. I think a lot of women have been dealing with this for a long time. I'll just start by saying that I had a full hysterectomy 12 years ago, and I did not need my ovaries removed, and specifically requested that they not be removed. But my doctor kept saying, well, you know, I said, why? And he said, why not? You're not having kids. And, you know, the conversation, I know, it's like, you're done having kids. Why do you need any hormones? Which is so crazy. And this
yes.
is a, you know, this is a gynecological oncologist, actually. So my point is that now that we're finally at this moment, my doctors, it took me a long time to find any doctor who would prescribe me a full bank of bioidenticals, because, of course, I need testosterone too. I need the whole gamut, right? And it's been really, really difficult. And in my area, Green Bay area, I could only find one doctor who's willing to do it. And because she didn't have a education in that, she said, basically, you find out what you need, which I did through Women's International Pharmacy, and you let me know what their suggestion is, and I'll go over it. And so my experience is that a lot of doctors are reticent because this wasn't being done, so they haven't been trained to actually give women these prescriptions that we're all going to be beating down the doors for now.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. Do you have a response to that?
She is not unique in what she's saying, unfortunately. Her personal situation, of course, is unique, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Should be treated that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the overarching story is not unique. I would just say I would encourage providers, like I said, even if you are not going to become the menopausal hormone therapy expert, to listen to women, to seek out those other providers who are offering this, who are seeking out that extra education, because, yeah, we didn't get it in medical school.
Sure.
Or nurse practitioner school,
mm-hmm.
And have that resource available to women.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Elizabeth. I'm glad you were able to find somebody to help you out.
Yeah.
Obviously, being very proactive, it's kind of, that's the way it is at this point, isn't it?
Yes, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things you can do to manage some of these things that we've talked about, like the mood swings, the hot flashes, chills, or whatever else that, you know, the mind fog. What are some of the things that we can do to take care of this?
Absolutely. So lifestyle things. It's similar to things that we talk about for all kinds of health benefits, but for midlife women especially, one of the big things that I talk a lot about is protein. So protein's important for all of us, but it does things like help us maintain our glucose or our blood sugar stability. It also helps us maintain our lean body mass. As we age, and unfortunately with declines in hormones like estrogen and testosterone, we just naturally begin to lose lean body mass. So I'm sure we can all picture in our heads a frail 80-year-old woman who looks like she will get blown over by the wind. We don't want to be that woman. That's not who we want to aspire to be. No offense to that poor woman, but yeah. We want to be strong. And so part of that is making sure that you're getting enough protein. But I always say protein and fiber are besties. They go together. And so again, looking at your nutrition, making sure that you're getting lots of fruits and vegetables, that supports your microbiome. Our mm-hmm. microbiome begins to change because of declines in estrogen. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Interesting.
So continuing to feed that the nutrients that it needs is a really excellent idea. And then, of mm-hmm. course, movement. And I say movement. I don't really like to use the word exercise. I think people should move for movement's sake, for being healthy, because that's going to mean something different to everyone. But again, when we talk about the midlife woman, I am really trying to encourage women to do weight training, even if they've never done that before. Again, it goes back to that lean body mass, building your body for your 70 and 80-year-old self. Another big one is sleep. Sleep is so hard when you're going through midlife, so that can be a vicious cycle, but there are some things to really focus on, you know, eliminating screens 2 to 3 hours before bedtime, making sure, especially if you're suffering with hot flashes or night sweats, making sure that room is cool. You may need a fan. You may only want to sleep in a, you know, little t-shirt or a tank top, and that's okay. Like, you may have to change things up like that. There are devices that have actually been studied that can be helpful, like cooling sheets. There's a new wristband. Of course, none of these things are super cheap, but there's a new cooling wristband, because what it's doing is responding before your body has that big event of a hot flash. It's getting triggered by these slight temperature changes. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, starts to cool you down. So those can be helpful. And then, of course, menopausal hormone therapy, which for, you know, lots of women, I wouldn't even say the majority, but lots of women, this is an excellent choice.
Mm-hmm. And what are the options there in that particular category?
So there's many, but as far as generally speaking, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone are kind of the main actors there. Mm-hmm. The estrogen is there to, well, prior to menopause, of course, it's there to support your menstrual cycle. But we have estrogen receptors basically from our head to our toe. And so oftentimes that's why women, especially in perimenopause, are feeling these symptoms. Those changes in estrogen before it actually declines are up and down like a roller coaster. So one day it may be sky high and the other day it's crashing down. And that's where women typically are having the most symptoms. So by supporting that with some estradiol, which is already the hormone that your body makes, that other caller talked about bioidentical.
Yeah.
That is, you know, the term that's out there, the buzzword, but it just means that this is the hormone that your body produced. Progesterone helps a lot with calm and with sleep. So that's an excellent one. And then testosterone for everyone, men and women, starts to decline as we age. But we are learning more now that women likely could benefit greatly from being replaced on testosterone as well.
Mm-hmm. So these are all things that you can speak to your physician about. Start there.
Yeah.
And if you don't like what you hear, then you can go to a specialist like yourself. And I'm sure there's other people in around that can then help you. If you've got a question for us, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or, of course, you can send us an email, too. And that's talk@WPR.org. Sue emailed to say that she is 60 years old and postmenopausal, but still struggling with menopause symptoms, brain fog, joint pain, hot flashes, and she's been told that she can't receive hormone replacement therapy because she had a subsegmental pulmonary embolism in her early 50s when she was still on birth control pills. And with the new recommendations, is there any chance that she could get HRT? Her understanding is that birth control pills are a much higher dose of hormones than HRT.
Sounds like she's really educated, which is excellent.
But, yes.
So, like you had said, I'm nobody's doctor here, but yes, there is some nuance there. The doctor that I studied under, she described it, and so I will steal it, as green lights, yellow lights, red lights. But that's an excellent way for everyone to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this woman would be in a yellow light category, which means it just needs a bit more attention and more nuance. So if, for example, and I think most providers, what would be excellent is if they could look at their patient and say, are you a green light? Okay, I can help here. Are you a red light? This is probably not going to happen, and this is why. Are you a yellow light? This would be the candidate, especially to go and see a specialist, because it is very nuanced. So, of course, there'd be more questions that we'd be asking. But generally speaking, just because someone has had a blood clot doesn't necessarily mean that they could not be on hormones.
Okay, great. Well, good news for you, Sue. Good luck with that. We're speaking with Dr. Tess Jordans, a board-certified physician who recently launched the telemedicine practice 1988 Wellness. She focuses on menopause and weight loss care for women aged 35 to 65 throughout Wisconsin. Again, give us a call if you have a question, 800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@WPR.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tomorrow on the show, Larry's going to be back to talk to Stan Temple about the new seasonal phenology calendar that always comes out this time of year. We're also going to talk to the author of a new guidebook called Birds of the Great Lakes. And in the last half hour, we'll talk about gifting for birders in your life. That's all tomorrow right here on the Larry Mueller Show. Right now, we are talking about menopause with Dr. Tess Jordans. And we've got a call. Deborah in Algonquin, Illinois. Go right ahead, please.
Hi. Yeah, my question for the doctor, I've heard that the estradiol, it's, as she said, bioidentical, and it's usually prescribed for certain areas of the body. But I've heard in recent times that it can be used on the face for wrinkles, or is that something that this cream can be used in different areas?
Okay, that's a new one on me. So what do you think?
So the short answer is yes, but we are talking about the local topical estrogen again. So there are systemic gels, patches, creams, sprays, but those are systemic. So we wouldn't want to use that because then you're getting more of this systemic medication, which may be over the dose that you're supposed mm-hmm. to have. But our topical, yes, I mean, technically you can. There are companies now that market a similar type of cream specifically for the face. But honestly, yes, you can use a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that up, Deborah. Very interesting. Now, one thing we didn't touch on yet is the weight gain that usually comes with menopause. So what usually happens when you enter menopause?
So again, with that decline in estrogen, estrogen's a big one. Testosterone, of course, plays a part in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But with that decline, as we talked about, one of the things that's changing is that microbiome. And our microbiome helps us with a number of things, but one of the things is with our food digestion and what key nutrients we're latching onto and things like that, and how we feel in our midsection and in our gut. But the other thing that's happening is our relationship, or our body's relationship, with insulin and glucose. And as that estrogen declines, we're becoming less responsive. We don't utilize that as well as our primary energy source. We also, as you said, begin to gain weight. And unfortunately for women, that starts to happen across the midsection. But not only is it something we necessarily don't like because our pants are tighter, but what's happening is that fat now is starting to grow around the organs. We call that visceral fat. This is not the good fat. I mean, I get it. Nobody wants to have fat, but this fat in particular makes it more difficult. It makes it this vicious cycle with our glucose and insulin. It also increases inflammation. Inflammation tends to be the basis for disease in the body in general, but it raises that inflammation as well, sets us up for things like diabetes and heart disease and other vascular issues.
So how can you tell if you're gaining weight, if it has to do with menopause, perimenopause, what have you, or if it's something else?
So I don't think there's a excellent answer of one or the other.
Right.
It's that they go together. If you're in that age group, if you're in that perimenopause age group, and or if you're having symptoms, because believe it or not, there are some women that don't really have a lot of symptoms, but you still may be having these physiologic or these body effects because the process is still happening. So I also studied obesity medicine. So I'm board certified in obesity medicine. And I did that because these two things go hand in hand, right? You can't talk about somebody's wellness or preventing disease without also talking about, like we had mentioned before, nutrition and movement. They go hand in hand. And for the midlife woman in particular, at least I think, this is a really important topic for them. So I don't think we necessarily have to tease out that answer, but we certainly need to do them together.
Because not only are you going through all this other stuff, and it's like you said, and your pants don't fit, and you feel awful in so many different ways. So addressing that is important. Yeah. Part of it too. Debbie in Galesville emailed to ask if there is an upper age when you can't get hormone replacement therapy, or is the prescribing of HRT based on lab results?
That's also an excellent question. Mm-hmm. So the Menopause Society, their guidelines say within 10 years of menopause. So for example, if a woman went through menopause at age 55, because we had mentioned that early 50s is average, mm-hmm. but a woman could be 55, 56. So technically once she hits 60, no, she's certainly not out of that window. Or the other criteria is 10 years. Now, those are guidelines, and just with any other medical guidelines, that doesn't mean it's a red light. It's that yellow light again, and that just means that there's probably more assessment. So if you're beyond 60, or if it's beyond that 10-year mark, there may be chances that you already have some evidence of cardiovascular disease or dementia or things like that, depending on how old the woman is. So it's a more nuanced answer, and it's certainly very individualized.
Okay. Thank you for that question, Debbie. If you've got a question, we still have 10 minutes left, so you can get it in 800-642-1234. If you prefer to do an email, it's talk@wpr.org. So are there any other, side effects with these hormone replacement therapies that maybe not something that someone would want to deal with?
Sure. Probably the biggest one is sometimes there will be some bleeding, especially if this woman, so in perimenopause, obviously that's probably less troublesome.
Sure.
But in menopause, of course, one of the upsides is that you no longer have a menstrual cycle. And so for some women, number one, it could be distressing, but number two, it can be kind of a nuisance. But typically speaking, it's really happening in that time period when you're just starting, or maybe there's an adjustment being made to your dose. For most women, that stops. And that's also, again, part of the conversation that you want to be having with your prescribing provider, mm-hmm. About what to look for and is this okay?
Sure. I'm sorry.
No, I was the only other thing, there's some women don't do well with progesterone. They can have a lot of GI side effects to that. There are some ways around it. And most women do fine, but there are some women who really have an intolerance. Now that's to an oral, right? So a pill that somebody takes. So things like an IUD is an excellent option because that's local, mm-hmm. But it provides the same endometrial protection. Now, if you don't have a uterus, you don't have to do progesterone. Some women do. It's absolutely safe to do that, mm-hmm. but you don't have to because you don't have to worry about a buildup of your endometrial lining, which is why we give progesterone when we're doing that hormone therapy.
And what are your thoughts on supplements?
So there are so many supplements out there. And there have been some that have been studied that may be beneficial. Again, it comes down to just because it's a supplement or they slap natural on the label or what have you, it's still a foreign substance to the body. It may interact with medications that you're taking. So it's definitely worth talking about specific ones that you're entertaining the idea of taking. Also, a cost. Menopausal hormone therapy, number one, is natural, right? Mm-hmm. This is what we talked about. It's what your body already made. And for most people, there is an option that's more affordable than maybe some of these supplements.
And it also depends on where they come from, too, because you never know what's in them, right?
Right. And, you know, this definitely is an area that it's not something really that's taught to most medical providers because it doesn't go through the FDA. You know, it's not regulated in the same way that medications are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, including myself, I don't necessarily have this like database in my head of like supplements. If someone has a particular one, I always say I'm happy to look into it. I'm happy to look and see if there are papers about it, et cetera, so that I can give more educated information. But it is a hard topic for most providers because, again, that's not something they teach. And I don't know that they will, unfortunately, because there's so many.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard that, too, with doctors. Like, yeah, we had a half a class on nutrition, so that was all we got. Yeah, that makes it difficult. So if someone decides that they wanted to talk with you, what is an appointment like online?
So usually, you know, so they would go to the website, they can book online. I try to make sure that there's multiple days and times and things like that available, again, because it's telemedicine. So, you know, trying to make the access easier. And then during the appointment, let me back up. Before the appointment, they get this lovely paper to fill out. But it is very helpful because then they give me all of their history, their goals. I mean, it's pretty thorough. Mm-hmm. But it's so that way at the time of the appointment, I'm prepared and we're just spending time talking about them, what their goals are, really getting to know them and what they've experienced and what they want to accomplish. Usually we're doing some education in the middle. You know, I spend, depending on how educated they come or, you know, how much they know about this, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes just talking to them about the studies or the evidence. And then we make a plan together because, again, I'm a physician, but I'm making recommendations. So we need to decide together what's best for the patient.
Okay. We've got one more caller, JC in Madison. We've only got a couple minutes, so make it fast.
Okay. I had a hysterectomy at 42. I'm 80 years old and I'm really tired all the time. Should I be taking estrogen? And why not? Or if I should?
So again, I'm not your physician, but generally speaking, if I heard you right, you said you're 80 years old. Unfortunately, for estrogen, that's not an option. But there are lifestyle things that still can be done.
Definitely. So don't give up, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you so much coming in, sharing your expertise. I'd love to touch bases with you again in the near future, because I'm sure there's a lot of questions that people have, especially now when things are changing. So
yeah,
thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Tess Jordans is a board-certified physician who recently launched the telemedicine practice 1988 Wellness, focusing on menopause and weight loss care for women ages 35 to 65 throughout Wisconsin. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. Larry was going to be back, and he's going to be talking to Stan Temple about the seasonal phenology that we always talk about this time of year. We've got a new guidebook to recommend called Birds of the Great Lakes, and then we're going to talk about gifts for people who like to watch birds. So thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our team for creating our shows every day. Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. Of course, Larry Mueller, and I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening.